The films of Stanley Kubrick, Martin Scorsese, Brian De Palma, and Quentin Tarantino would look dramatically different were it not for our next guest, because Garrett Brown invented something that has made possible many of cinema's most iconic scenes. To celebrate the 40th anniversary of his Steadicam, the Film Society of Lincoln Center has organized an exciting series of movies that have been enhanced by it. It's called Going Steady, spelled S-T-E-A-D-I, and it opens today and runs through January 3rd. I'm very pleased that it has brought the Oscar-winning cinematographer Garrett Brown to our show now. Welcome.
Thank you, Leonard. Thanks.
Certain things are so taken for granted that you can't quite remember what they were like, things were like before them. What did cinematographers do before you invented the Steadicam? Was it all just dolly shots?
Well, essentially, if you like smooth shots, I have to remind kids today, because it's so facile now with drones and, you know, and so on, that if you like the camera to move smoothly, it was the dolly, the camera car, or the crane. End of story. That's when I got into the business.
And how does the Steadicam operate?
Well, I was 3,000 miles from Hollywood and faced with a very heavy dolly and a stupidly light camera, and I had to put them together to make smooth shots. And I kept looking at this pinheaded combination and thinking, you know, there has to be some way, when you get right down to it, you want to isolate the camera from the ever-moving human. You know, the camera has to progress as if it was on wheels. And if you start thinking about something like that bit by bit, that eventually led to a solution.
Well, there have been handheld cameras, camera shots throughout the history of movies.
But they're all jumpy.
No. You had to come up with something that looked like it was on a dolly.
I have to admit, I love the freedom of handheld, but I hated the way it looked. We don't see that way. We see, when we walk around, a very steady universe in front of us.
How long did it take to perfect your idea?
I was at it a couple of years and three false starts, and then finally just set myself to try it one more time and came up with it.
It just worked.
It did, actually, right out of the box, pretty astonishingly.
It has to have built-in things to keep it steady.
Well, if you want the particulars, they're brief. It's four things that have to be done. If you expand the masses of what you're floating around, put the battery and the monitor at a distance from the camera, put a gimbal, that yacht object that keeps lamps stable, at the center of gravity. And then, of course, don't hold it with your hands because you'll shake from the load and so on. Hold it with a tireless sort of spring-loaded arm. And the fourth thing, oddly enough, is you have to see through the lens. And in that era, it was a fiber optic viewfinder and then video. Once you do that, it works.
You say in that era because things have been improved over the years.
Well, when I started, there was not so-called video that could be applied to a film camera. So hence the fiber optics.
And when did you first use it?
I used it in 1975 in earnest. I used it on three films in 1975 and kind of went right off the block with three very audacious filmmakers who got it. The first was the great late Haskell Wexler, who stuck it into Bound for Glory, which is the first movie I'm introducing at the Film Society. Mm-hmm. And then quickly in succession, Rocky and Marathon Man. And so my little East Coast filmmaking persona suddenly jumped up into that business.
And some of those scenes have become famous, like the sequence in Rocky when the audience is swept up the stairs of the Philadelphia Art Museum as Sylvester Stallone runs toward the museum. He's just recently been announced as Donald Trump's choice to head the NEA. So I guess he was already announcing that through that sequence that he loved art.
I hope you're kidding.
No.
Are you?
Nope.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I love
I'm
Sly.
Quite serious about those things.
Among those choices we've heard about lately, that's certainly not the oddest by any means. I love that.
What was Stanley Kubrick like to work with on The Shining in 1980?
Well, his reputation was formidable and eccentric and driven, and he had a reputation for making a lot of takes and so on. I actually loved working with him, and I loved him as a human being. I had a grand time, but my day one, I think I did 45 takes of something, and that was that woke me up, you know.
The Steadicam was used pretty extensively in The Shining, especially where Danny is riding his tricycle through the halls of the hotel. It wouldn't be half as scary without the Steadicam perspective.
Well, you know, that's how it's turned out, and it's kind of a cult film. But I was going to mention that in all of these pictures, we had no idea where they were going. Rocky was a gritty little film in Philly, and you were preoccupied with getting through the day and getting to the top of the steps without falling down and whatever. So the outcome is astonishing to me.
But you must have known that The Return of the Jedi would be a big movie.
Well, by then, yes. We didn't know the speeder bike sequence would be that amazing.
How fast were you going?
I was walking through the woods at 112 miles an hour, actually, and on screen. I was walking at whatever it is, 3 or 4 miles an hour, and with the camera running very slowly. So when you bump it back up to projection speed, I was effectively going 112.
And that's an old trick. Alfred Hitchcock did it, used it once when he had a car go out of control. He just ran the camera at a different speed. You can still do that to make things suddenly look like they're totally chaotic?
In this very technical age, that's still a good trick. But we had other difficulties because I had to prevent myself from locally being lower or higher or left or right on that course. So we did a lot of stuff in the woods to keep myself, on a straight path.
And then there's the iconic scene in Goodfellas in which you follow characters all the way through the back corridors of the Copacabana. And that's a really long shot. How long did it last?
Well, that was the great Larry McConkie doing that shot for Scorsese, a wonderful shot. And I saw it at the same time moviegoers saw it, although we had heard that it was pretty spectacular.
But he was using your Steadicam?
Yes.
At this point, were you getting a lot of requests from different cinematographers to use the Steadicam?
Yes. I expected to work every day once I realized what it was capable of doing. But it was sort of the bold ones in the beginning, and then it's a progression. By now, it's astonishingly all over the world,
And it makes everything seem effortless. How effortless is it?
Well, it used to be a lot less effortless than it is now. The one on Kubrick's film weighed 65 pounds. Mm. But, of course, I was a lot more effortless myself at that point.
And now how much does it weigh?
Well, it depends. I have one that I might show tonight, which is for smartphones, that weighs under a pound.
Wow.
So the phenomenon scales down most beautifully.
You can do a smartphone Steadicam?
Yes. We actually made one a couple of years ago. Tiffin, my licensee, made one called the Smoothie, a name I didn't much like. But now there's a new one that is augmented by electronics called the Volt, which is absolutely spectacular.
I'm speaking
that
with
Gary. That has a commercial taint to it. I apologize.
But it's okay.
It's really good. I'm still gobsmacked by it.
Garrett Brown is the inventor of the Steadicam. He's being celebrated at the Film Society of Lincoln Center with a series called Going Steady, 40 Years of Steadicam. It runs from today through January 3rd. I should point out that you won a special Technical Academy Award for the Steadicam's invention in 1977. So they recognized the importance of this invention very early.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Do you think that it's possible to use Steadicam in the wrong way for the wrong reasons?
Well, the wrong way to use it is in the same sense that a violin requires a skilled operator, you might say. A Steadicam requires a skilled human being. It doesn't work without one. So an undedicated or a newbie can make a mess of a Steadicam shot. But at this point, we teach thousands of people to do it, and the level of skill is higher than mine back when I was doing it.
So when you see a movie, do you automatically spot the use of the camera?
No, that's funny. I get into films. My wife, Ellen, will give me a nudge in the ribs and say, gosh, look at that, and then I'll realize it's a great Steadicam shot. But I'm at heart a movie viewer, not really a techie.
How did you come to this? Weren't you originally part of a folk duo, Brown and Dana, with Al Dana?
Yes, that was
was a very good year.
That was one of my favorite jobs, actually. I was devastated when that went away.
And what happened?
Well, it was a long story. I had a car crash and the Beatles came along. All the forces were kind of opposed to the idea of me being a folk singer. And then I realized that I had left school to do that and I had no way to earn a living. I ended up selling Volkswagens and being very upset about it. And eventually decided to teach myself filmmaking in the library in Philadelphia.
Wow.
Which worked to an extent, nobody would hire me because they could tell I was a dilettante. But I did get a job in an ad agency who could not tell that I was a dilettante. And that led in a circuitous way to, you know, my own film company and then being that East Coast filmmaking guy with my big dolly, you know.
And then that led to the Steadicam. And then you have other inventions that have enhanced, football games, Skycam, Olympic diving, the dive cam, the Moby cam, underwater cameras that follow Olympic swimmers.
Note to self, stop calling them cam dive.
Well, it's okay. Do they all operate under pretty much the same principles?
No, the Skycam did originally. It was a balanced object on a gimbal, except that motors filled in for the operator's fingers in that case, and that worked astonishingly well. But by the time you get to the underwater one, that's an elegant little submarine thing that hides in the on the lane line. You know, they're all different from there.
Did they come to you? Did NFL come to you and say, we need a camera that can do something that right now we just have to run tracks all along the sidelines?
Not exactly. The NFL got aboard once it was demonstrated by the XFL that viewers loved the Skycam. I did it so early, Leonard, that it was a real tour de force. In 1984 we did it when computers were relatively primitive. And there was a hiatus. I wasn't able to make it a success in 84, but finally time spun around and it went happening in 2003.
And computers, I'm sure, have changed the whole way that
I tried to run it with an abacus initially, and that was a disaster.
But as we have learned, what used to require a room now can run a computer on a teeny little thing smaller than our phone.
And we take it for granted so amazingly at this point. Where's it going? You know?
Going underwater is really important because watching swimmers used to be impossible in the old days.
Well, the Federation was very jumpy about this thing, and I finally said to them, look, watching swimming from above the water is like watching ice skating from under the ice. You know, and there was a pause, and then they sort of considered giving it a try. You know?
Mm-hmm. And now, as I understand it, it runs in the family. Your son, Jonathan Brown, who's a professional cinematographer, do you ever work together?
We did, actually. On Warren Beatty's film Bullworth, we had the great joy of going to work together, two Steadicams side by side. He has now.
Bullworth was about politics. I don't remember too many Steadicam shots.
Oh, well, I hope you won't remember them. If they're good, they're invisible. I think that's the point. But Jonathan is now a director, which is great. He every now and then calls me up and says, I'm jumping up, you know, and I go, okay, good luck.
I wonder what it would have been like if someone like Max Ophuls had a Steadicam, somebody who just loved crane shots and dolly shots. When you look at those old films, are you amazed at just how cleverly some of those old directors pull these things off?
Abel Gantz and Napoleon. Well, he's a great lover of moving the camera. I'm both sorry and glad that none of them figured this out because it could have been done in, you know, by Romans, basically, skipping the video viewfinding part and skipping the camera part. But the mechanics of it are Newtonian, very simple, so... I am grateful that nobody came up with it, actually.
Are you still shooting films?
No, I stopped. I hung up my sled, you might say, in 2004.
Why?
Well, I love the act of doing Steadicam, but I began to be seduced by a lot of other projects. I love the inventing side, and I love the teaching side. And after 100 films, I decided that was good. That's enough. Time to turn to another aspect of it.
How much is what you have done a collaboration between you and the director? It's my sense that some directors really want to control every movement of the camera, and others just say, Garrett, you take care of that.
I've had both varieties, but to flog the violin analogy again, the violinist is an operator, in effect, and the conductor is analogous to the director or the DP cinematographer, and the writer is the composer, you know. So I have the opportunity for a bit of virtuosity in the local aspect of operating, which I think is a seminal movie-making skill anyway. But, of course, I'm at the at the behest of the director and or the cameraman.
Well, what do you prefer? Being able to work it out yourself, or being told this is what I'd like to achieve?
I like both. I'm not a, you know, I can only imagine what a concert musician feels, but I think to be conducted by a great conductor would be a thrill, you know. And to stand on a stage by yourself and do violin partitas would be a thrill. So they're all areas of that spectrum. I love working for great directors.
Give me some examples.
Well, I dearly loved Kubrick, among others. I loved Hal Ashby and John Schlesinger and Spielberg. I had a wonderful time with Spielberg.
Well, you worked with some pretty good directors.
Yeah, it was, you know, among good luck, mine stands out. I think I was a really lucky guy.
Garrett Brown will be giving a masterclass talk for free today at 5 p.m. in the Eleanor Bunin Monroe Film Center. You'll be telling people how to work the Steadicam?
Free? They didn't tell me that. No, I'm actually talking about The Moving Camera is the title of this talk, which allows me to talk about almost anything.
And then you'll be introducing Hal Ashby's Bound for Glory tonight at 6:30 p.m. and then John Schlesinger's Marathon Man at 9:30, the two screenings tonight. Tomorrow night, Rocky at the 6:30 screening and Kubrick's The Shining at 9:30.
And the series goes on and on with some of my favorite Steadicam films, so that's good.
For more information about the whole schedule, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. And my great thanks to Garrett Brown for being on our show today to talk about this fabulous invention that we now take for granted. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Same. Thank you.